We all prefer things a certain way, like groceries. If you want groceries just how you like them, you gotta try Instacart. They have a new preference picker that lets you pick how ripe or unripe you want your bananas. Shoppers can see your preferences up front, helping guide their choices. Because when it comes to groceries, the details matter. Instacart. Get groceries just how you like.
The Bleacher Report app is your destination for sports. Right now, the NBA is heating up. March Madness is here, and MLB is almost back. Every day there's a new headline, a new highlight, a new moment you've got to see for yourself. That's why I stay locked in with the Bleacher Report app. For me, it's about staying connected to my sports. I can follow the teams I care about, get real-time scores, breaking news, and highlights all in one place. Download the Bleacher Report app today so you never miss a moment.
Hello, listeners of the Tower. Once again, happy holidays. We're in the cold December months where all structure seems to fade away, and we all get to unplug a little bit. And on the topic of unplugging, I'm thrilled to bring you this episode of the Tower with cinephile, writer, and brilliant Freudian psychoanalyst Mary Wilde and her Tower film, The Matrix. What more perfect film could we unplug with during this holiday season? Honestly, the more I thought about this film, it truly is a perfect Tower film. I think my brain actually broke after I saw this film in 1999 when it came out. It was the turn of everything. I feel like all of our brains were changed after seeing The Matrix. And discussing this film in a philosophical, psychological way with this brilliant woman, Mary Wilde, it's just one of the most thrilling conversations. In fact, it was so thrilling that we will have a part two that will be posted on my Patreon. The Tower is on Patreon, and for just $1 a month, you can get ad-free episodes and a part two to this discussion about The Matrix with Mary Wilde. So feel free to listen on any podcast platform you listen on. And everyone, I hope you enjoyed this episode with Mary Wilde as we dive into her Tower film, The Matrix. Welcome to the Tower. Today, I have Freudian psychoanalyst and my dear friend, Mary Wilde. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Emily. It's such an honor to be here to talk with you.
Thank you so much. I've been such a fan of you on the Wonderful Evolution of Horror podcast, as well as your Patreon, which I find so fascinating. Everyone needs to subscribe and donate. And I just wanted to plug, you have a book coming out soon too.
Yes, I do. Thank you so much for mentioning it. It is going to be published with Routledge, and it's going to be released later in this year after Halloween. It's called Psychoanalyzing Horror Cinema.
It looks so cool. You had an artist friend render the cover, and it's from the film Black Swan, which I just adore.
Yes, absolutely. The supremely talented Susanna Vilchez, who goes by Suspiria Land on Instagram, she painted the cover after I spoke with her about my vision for what I wanted to convey. And she came up with something quite remarkable. I'm just absolutely blessed that she painted it for me.
I cannot recommend your work, spoken word, written word. Everyone, please follow Mary Wilde. You need to follow this woman to the ends of the earth, because I know I'm going to.
Gosh, Emily, thank you so much. I mean, hearing you say that is so thrilling, because as you know, I first encountered your work before you and I ever spoke, and I was immediately blown away. The films that you create are so resonant. I feel very seen and reflected in your vision. So much of what you do, I find extremely identifiable, and you're just one of the greatest filmmakers working today. So I'm kind of pinching myself here. I'm having a fangirl moment. Not only do I get to admire your wonderful films, but I get to call you my friend. I'm so blessed and lucky.
I'm blushing so much right now. Mary, I can't even begin. Like, I don't even know what to say. Thank you. I'm embarrassed. Thank you so much. And I'm so flattered that you might think that of me. Honestly, I just regard you so highly. So this is a love fest already.
Yes.
Clearly. Well, this is so thrilling for me. You were one of the first people I talked to about this podcast idea I had called The Tower. This idea, it's really, you know, we're in pretty crazy times wherever you live on the political spectrum. It's a time of great change right now. And it's a time where I really need to go back into the things that I love and that I'm obsessed with, because I find hope and direction through allegory. And I find the greatest allegories for me as an artist in films. And when I talked to you about this and posed the question, you know, what would your tower film be? Your answer kind of surprised me at first. But the more I thought about it, I was like, this is kind of the perfect film to begin this series. So what film did you pick?
Yes, I chose The Matrix, released in 1999, directed by the Wachowskis.
What a thrilling rewatch. When did you first see The Matrix? Did you see it in a theater? Did you see it at home? Like, what was your first time encountering this epic film?
So when this first released, I was sort of intrigued by it, but I didn't quite know where my tastes fell yet. And maybe I had some preconceived notions about The Matrix being like marketed as an action movie. So this was something that I didn't actually seek out initially in the cinema. Now, that is to my great regret. I really wish that I'd had the wherewithal at that time to run to the cinema and watch it on the massive screen, because it is a masterpiece. And now since then, of course, I have grown a taste for action movies. And that's why, you know, hindsight is 20/20. But when I first encountered The Matrix, it was on home video, and it sort of shocked me. Initially, I didn't know what to make of it. I was still trying to come to grips with the style, because I was trying to like find my feet about what kind of films appealed to me aesthetically. Of course, there was a lot of chatter about Keanu Reeves' acting at the time. People were saying that he was like just transferring his like sort of mediocre acting skills from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure into this movie, that he seemed a bit wooden. But actually now I look at it and think, no, he's actually perfect, because you would expect someone going through a tower moment to be a bit discombobulated. You know, they wouldn't be like so extremely natural and perfectly like seamlessly aligned with their environment. So the fact that his acting skills, you know, admittedly, maybe not so much nowadays, but at that time, they were still a little bit unsophisticated. I think it works. I think it's actually genius casting. So when I first saw it, I regrettably now, I saw it on the smaller screen in my home, you know, but it kind of blew my mind. And it took several watches in subsequent years for me to understand that this movie provoked a rupture in my psyche. And what I mean by that is that for me, watching The Matrix at the age that I was, you know, like a sort of budding adult, it wasn't just like an exciting watch. It was destabilizing, because it sort of gave shape to something I'd felt but couldn't articulate, that the version of life presented to me as a quote unquote normal person might be more about control than truth. So I grew up in a very conservative household where there were very clear expectations about a so-called successful life and what that should look like. I was instructed that I had to marry a man and have children and pursue a prestigious career and acquire all the appropriate status symbols. And at the time, I didn't think of this as ideology. It was just simply presented as the way things are. So seeing the Matrix crack something open, I started to wonder, what if the belief system I'd inherited wasn't objective reality, but a kind of simulation? And what if, like, all my choices, my thoughts, even desires were shaped by forces I hadn't chosen? And this wasn't something abstract, or it was sort of like, it felt personal and disorienting. So like Neo, I was being shown the wires behind the walls of my own life. And like the Tower card in Tarot, it felt like everything I'd leaned on for stability was suddenly up for grabs. Mm. So all of this didn't quite occur all at once after seeing the Matrix, because I was so indoctrinated by the conservatism of my household. But it took several watches to kind of like keep chipping away at the cracks that the film initially produced. And now I watch it and it's like having the Tower moment, but from a safe distance. And it validates a lot of things for me. And it sort of makes me feel happy that I embraced the Tower experience. You know what I'm saying?
Totally. I love so much of what you just said. When I was rewatching it, that box and that structure, you know, when you're in the Matrix in the film, it's very green and it's very grid-like.
Yeah.
There are boxes, there are cubicles, there are frames, the windows with the window washer. Everything is outlined exactly so. And that's exactly how my life felt as well. Just with my original question, when did you first see it? Did you see it alone? Were you in front of your TV at home, like lying on your stomach, like eating popcorn? Do you remember what that was like?
I remember renting it from the video store, and I brought it back home and we watched it, myself, my brother and sister. They're younger than me, so they were like still in high school. And we were sort of like scratching our heads. Like, we really were confused. There's a lot that went over our head for sure. But I also loved the fashion. I loved the soundtrack. I don't remember us eating anything. I think we were too stunned to like have snacks. We were sort of taken aback by this totally like out of left field cinematic experience. Cause we watched a lot of movies, you know, we were always like at the video store, because our parents were so strict, like watching movies was one of the few things we could do. And we just like did it to the very like excess, you know? So we were sort of like film buffs in a way for our age, but I certainly had never seen anything like this. It seemed so radical. And I agree with you, like the color scheme, that Matrix green, whatever that is, you know, whatever the official name of that color is, and the way it tinges everything. Mm. And yeah, like just the look of it was so attractive. And like, I remember we were like sort of captivated by what we saw, but I don't remember us discussing it after. It was sort of like, it didn't have what you, even though I chose it, this is very much my Tower movie. You would expect like watching a Tower film to like, you know, logically it would follow that you watch a so-called Tower movie and then your whole life collapses and you're like, oh my God, this movie like completely changed my destiny. You know, it wasn't quite like that, at least for me. It was more like a planting of a seed, and it was a Tower seed being planted, and the tree that would like burst out from that seed, it would take time, and with time the Tower effect would take hold. I just didn't know that yet.
I love that description because I know exactly what you mean. I'm sure I'll say this a lot during this series, but this is the perfect Tower film because it deconstructs everything. It's the kind of film where I believe I saw this at home too on a rental. I was younger and this is actually rated R, which I was surprised by. But I can't imagine my parents were okay taking me to the cinema to see this. And I just remember being so stunned by it that I felt the same way as you. Like I walked away kind of in a shock and a numbness.
Yeah.
But a numbness born from absolute awe. And curiosity. It's the kind of film where I immediately wanted to watch it again.
Yes.
And I think I think my brother and I rented it so much. It's one of the, I grew up with Blockbuster Video, all praise. Love you, Blockbuster. Like, bring them all back, please. But I remember, I think we rented this so much. This might have been one of the VHS, tapes that they gave us because we rented it so much. That happened with The Neverending Story too.
Aww, that's a badge of honor.
I totally agree. So if someone who's listening to this podcast actually has not seen The Matrix, I'm going to read the log line. Here just to kind of outline it, and encourage anyone who hasn't seen this film, please go see it. It's more relevant today than ever in a way. Mm-hmm. So the IMDb logline says, The Matrix, when a beautiful stranger leads computer hacker Neo to a forbidding underworld, he discovers the shocking truth. The life he knows is the elaborate deception of an evil cyber intelligence.
Mm.
Interesting. So let's dive in. That log line and this film is truly the paradigm shifting upheaval of old forms. And the paradigm shift that this film put into my brain, you can apply that as a lens to anything in life, to every moment of life. I don't know if you have this too, Mary. Every now and then I feel like, you know, if I'm waiting in line at the DMV or I'm just grocery shopping or talking to someone, every now and then I'll be like, is this happening? You know what I mean? I don't know if you ever have that, but like,
oh yeah,
I'll be in the middle of a conversation or something and I'll just be like, is this, am I actually here? Like, is this, and it's almost like I float out of my body for a second and I'm watching myself and I can't help but think of The Matrix. What from this film do you still kind of notice in your day-to-day life? Things like deja vu, and things like that. What little, touchstones from this film do you find yourself kind of referencing in life, even today?
Oh yeah, that's such a great question. And I totally do relate to what you said about little moments where I'm like, okay, I am a spirit inside like this body and I'm animated and what's happening? Like, what is all of this? You know, where am I going? What is the point? Who put me here? Like I start to have all these like little questions. They're sort of like peppered across time and reality. It's possible maybe like once or twice if I've been like with a friend, you know, we've smoked some weed and then I start to really think about these things and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to have a psychotic break because I'm too aware of something and I have too many questions, but I also have such awareness and it's driving me crazy, you know, like, so it's definitely possible to like, in a way, bad trip when you over think certain things. I've had the same experience looking at myself in the mirror. I remember even being like little and I would stare at my reflection in the mirror for like 30 minutes without blinking or trying not to blink. And suddenly like my features would seem like not real. And I would like these little tricks I would play on my own mind. This is what happens when you don't let your children go out and play, by the way, if my mom's listening. You know what I'm saying? But the point is, yeah, there are a lot of things going on in this movie that in a way, like makes the audience feel seen in terms of these lingering thoughts and doubts. For sure, deja vu. I mean, when they mentioned that, I remember even when I first watched it and they're like, wait, you saw a deja vu? That's a glitch in the system. And I'm like, oh my God, is that what a real deja vu is? Like, you know, I was convinced that like there was a sign, you know? And of course nowadays it's so popular, like on social media, there's so many content creators who are like new age spiritualists and they tell you that if you see like angel numbers, like repeated numbers or deja vu or whatever it may be, that it's a sign, you know, like it's there's a glitch in the system and these things are just hyper normalized. Mm. Apart from that one, this might sound like a really banal example from the movie, but right at the very start of The Matrix, when Neo, who is known inside the simulation as Thomas Anderson, when he like wakes up late, and is late for work, and when he's at work, when he's at his boss's office, he's looking out the window and there are these like window cleaners. Mm-hmm. And it seems like such a banal moment, but actually to me, this is something I've experienced before where you're compelled to be present and focus on the task at hand. But there's this thing on, like on the periphery of your vision that's really like insisting and drawing your attention. And like, you're like, what are they doing? What is all of this? And it's, you start to suddenly wonder, is this a real moment? And you feel derealized or depersonalized. That's how that scene came across to me. Now this occurred to me upon rewatches, but the way that the Wachowskis like show the window cleaners and the squeegee sound outside and how like, to me, symbolically, it represents, you know, the system trying to clarify itself, the system trying to reset itself and like, in a way, gaslight the subject into thinking, no, this is real. Like the polished thing that we're showing you, even showing like window cleaners, literally cleaning the window. This is the official story and you have to buy into this narrative. There is no other possibility. And like, here's the shiny proof and evidence before your eyes. No questions allowed, you know, and that's sort of what Neo is compelled to do. I've had a few moments like this happen to me, where someone's saying something and I'm like, why are they so obsessed with this? And it seems like, you know, when I start to overthink it, I start to think, what if that person said that because they're trying to convince me that this reality is real, you know, like, it's so easy to get wrapped up in these, like, in a way, little mini conspiracy theories. But I kind of like these mind games. I love any film that is what I classify to be like an ontological thriller. That is to say, a film that causes us to question the very nature of our reality. And Matrix does that so, so, so well. It's like, you know, it's probably like one of the most well-known examples of this.
With VerboCare, help is always ready, before, during, and after your stay. We've planned for the plot twists, so support is always available. Because a great trip starts with peace of mind.
The Bleacher Report app is your destination for sports. Right now, the NBA is heating up, March Madness is here, and MLB is almost back.
Every day there's a new headline, a new highlight, a new moment you've got to see for yourself. That's why I stay locked in with the Bleacher Report app. For me, it's about staying connected to my sports. I can follow the teams I care about, get real-time scores, breaking news, and highlights all in one place. Download the Bleacher Report app today so you never miss a moment.
Other moments in The Matrix that in a way reinforce this type of thinking are, like, of course, the lady in the red dress, you know, noticing mm-hmm. something that is striking. And you're like, why did my attention go there? And am I being compelled, you know, to notice that? Like this, it seems so on the nose. It seems so obvious. And maybe it's been put there for a purpose. Just so many different little like moments that occur that together weave this picture of what if there is a grander manipulation and what we've been told is our reality, period, you know, end of story, is really just a facade. It's actually a simulation and someone is controlling everything behind the scenes.
I love all of those answers and that window washing scene. I totally know what you mean. And I want to revisit the word that you used because I just want to hear a little bit more about that. What do you mean about feeling derealized in life? I'd love to hear a little bit more about that term.
Yes. So, derealization is actually a psychological term. It's a mental state where you feel detached from your surroundings, perceiving them to be unreal or even dreamlike or distorted. And it's often described as feeling like you're watching your life from a distance or through a fog or veil. And this feeling can be obviously very distressing, especially if it's impacting you every single day. And it is actually a common symptom of something called depersonalization, derealization disorder, DPDR. But it can also occur in other conditions like anxiety or panic attacks. So the key characteristics of derealization are, you know, obviously feeling detached from reality. There may be even like visual distortions, time perception changes. It can also feel like you're very numb, like strange, like dreamlike, you know, feeling of numbness. But ultimately, it's a strong sense of unreality. Like everyday objects and situations may feel unfamiliar or artificial. And there's like there can also be like a distorted perception of space where you feel like your surroundings are not as they should be. And there's so many things that can trigger this, such as obviously stress or, you know, trauma, anxiety, whatever it may be. For myself personally, I have felt this at various times. Just because I actually have a PTSD diagnosis. So one of the things that I struggle with sometimes is a feeling of dissociation. Like my mind wants to escape the present moment because I'm remembering something. Like it's like an intrusive thought times a thousand, you know? And so the way that the mind tries to protect what is essentially a flashback is to dissociate. So sometimes with that, it's not always, but sometimes with that, I do feel like a numbness in dissociation or as if my surroundings are not real. Now, thankfully, through eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, EMDR therapy, I have found a lot of relief through these types of symptoms. So it is something that has helped me tremendously because it's trauma-informed and so healing and actually like helps people to resolve a lot of these problems. But I feel like the movie The Matrix really plays on that feeling of derealization. And it's one of the main methods and techniques that it utilizes to drive home the point that Neo, you know, makes that realization about the nature of his life. And it's through that separation that, you know, initially he's sort of like, he takes for granted that his life is the only reality. He doesn't even question it. Now he's sort of like a cyber character, you know, cyber hacker, or I guess he's dealing in, you know, the early internet, and mm-hmm. he's doing stuff like that. But it shocks him when he realizes that, when it's proposed to him that this is really just a simulation. That feeling of detaching and being compelled to release an entire life that you always took for granted, the way that the film communicates that through moments of derealization is so powerful and sensitive, which I love. The Wachowskis are really good at doing that.
Obviously, in the film, he follows the white rabbit to the club. He starts to uncover the mystery, and finally he is brought into Zion. He is woken up because he took the correct pill. and he's kind of in that like arcade grab machine kind of way, pulled out of the muck. It's almost like a fetal fluid. Once he's woken up and they start to program him with knowledge and abilities, the movement of his eyes, it's almost like REM, like rapid eye movement. It's almost like what happens when we're sleeping and we're dreaming. Because I find those dream states they're not entirely dissimilar from EMDR therapy. Because in a way, the brain is allowed to relax and dig deeper than the conscious brain would allow. At least in my experience. So that is all. I'm just kind of rhapsodizing about what you just said. I'm going to have to dive way deeper into derealization and that entire concept. And I wonder, this conspiracy-minded way of looking at the world, I wonder if feeling that I'm part of a conspiracy is actually an odd comfort in moments like that, of saying, none of this is real. I'm just unable to kind of process what's going on. And I could go down a rabbit hole with that. But I wonder if that kind of internalized storyline that I'm in the middle of a conspiracy is almost comforting to us, just because as humans we have to construct stories in order to make sense of things. The Bible is a collection of stories. Alice in Wonderland are, you know, it's an episodic story, and I wonder if maybe I should think about my life a little bit more like a conspiracy. Maybe it'll just be more interesting.
Yes, I understand what you mean. And I actually think that the process that underpins wanting to do that is actually a really positive and well-intentioned and compassionate impulse that we might have, only in the sense that, as you said, you know, when we're looking at the world, especially as you said earlier, in today's world, there's so much chaos. There's so much uncertainty. There's so much injustice. And frankly, just atrocities being committed at so many levels. And even on a personal level, people will go through hardships and really difficult times. And as you said earlier, you know, the brain is trying to configure and narrativize these events into something cohesive that makes sense, into like a smooth running story. But of course, that's not possible. You know, there's so much uncertainty. There's so much unknown. There's just a lot of like fakeness out in the world also, like deliberate disinformation and, campaigns to confuse people or harm people ideologically. So there is just going to be a lot of discombobulated feelings and confusion that occur in the person. So at a subjective level, when the brain is like banging, you know, against that door of trying to figure out exactly what's going on, that's what the brain wants to do. Just taking a step back and going, I don't have all the answers, but I suspect there is stuff behind the scenes that I don't know about. I suspect that I may be part of a grander scheme. Now, whether positive or negative, there could be, you know, there's this great term, which is the reverse of paranoia, which is pronoia, the belief that the entire universe is plotting not to harm you, but to help you. It's such a great term. I absolutely love it. It's sort of like a spiritualist concept, but and there's a whole book about it, actually, pronoia. But
oh my gosh, that,
yeah,
that is, you know, so what I'm fascinating. I have never heard of that, pronoia. I feel like
pronoia. Yeah,
that is, yeah, that's like affirmations taken to the next level.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like a really positive mindset shift, whereas you literally interpret every event, good or bad, as part of a greater vision or greater design that has been written and fated to help you. And even though it hurts right now, you're actually being put on a path to uncover something sublime. And of course that's conspiratorial, you know,
sure.
But maybe, as you said, you know, I just find it I find it helpful too, to think, what if I'm just in the Truman Show? You know, like this entire life I'm living right now, everybody is like, you know, a hired actor, and maybe aliens are looking at me like I'm on Big Brother and I'm just like on a reality show and they're just laughing at me, whatever it may be, you know?
Totally.
But then when you think that, like, I know for me, just at purely at an experiential level, when I start thinking that way, it is a relief, because I'm like, oh, then this, it's fine. You know, it's all good. I'm just part of the Truman Show, you know, or all of this is just some like Looney Tunes simulation that I've randomly entered, but there may be other parallel realities happening at the same time. And I might be on a better timeline somewhere else, you know, whatever like mind crafted theory, like it may be, all of it is very conspiratorial, but it is soothing, because it stops my brain from trying to figure it out in the moment and just gives my brain a bit of a pause and relief. And then I can just like breathe and say, I don't have control over this, and I'm going to relinquish control and just have faith that it's all going to work out somehow, you know? And I can continue to be questioning and critical and use like my, you know, like have my wits about me and everything. It's not to say that I'm supposed to be compliant or passive. It's really just a temporary kind of like ceasefire of my brain, because my brain is very anxiety prone too. And it just wants to always know everything and figure everything out. So just releasing that tension, even if it's just momentarily, it is soothing and it is a relief. So I can relate to what you said.
I love that. It is kind of wonderful. I'm like obsessed with this term pronoia now. Like I seriously need to dive into that, because what a revelatory way of looking at the world. It almost makes every mishap, every dropping something in the kitchen or someone cutting you off in traffic, it almost makes it hilarious, because you know deep in your soul that that's actually there to help you. So how funny that that's happening right now. The world becomes a comedy of errors instead of a dirge, like a Kafka-esque nightmare. I kind of love that conspiracy that, yeah, we're all part of the Truman Show, which is also such a great parallel to the Matrix of, and going along what you said, like these are artificial things. These are props. These are hired backgrounds. That guy's not in character yet. What's going on? You know, and I actually share that too every now and then when I'm in New York City kind of walking around. Every now and then I do this weird trick. I don't know if anybody else does this, but I will actually look around. I'm an actor. I'm theater trained, mostly do film and TV now. But when I'm like walking around New York City, every now and then I play this game with myself of looking around and saying, all of these people around me are actors. Mm-hmm. But if you do that in life, and this is my little paradigm shifting, like matrixy way of looking at the world. Sometimes they are all the best actors because how fascinating that they could each make exactly the choices that they're making. That guy's walking hunched over and he's carrying something heavy and he's talking on the phone and arguing with someone. What a Philip Seymour Hoffman level of performance is that man giving to the role that he is playing right now? It's a really fascinating way of looking at the world. And it actually makes, I'm an actor. I'm obsessed with human behavior and human motivation and intention. And just little things about people. It actually just makes every single human being so fascinating. And on the level of like the greatest actors who have ever lived. So that's like secretly, that's my little conspiracy that goes on in my head every now and then.
Oh my gosh. That is so cool. And I'm actually like a little stunned right now. I feel like we're so similar because it's so uncanny because I haven't had precisely the thought that you just described in terms of the detail that who we might imagine might be really an actor, you know, what they're bringing to their role. But I have had something similar where this happens, especially like when I've been to the theater. I'm not that well versed in the theater. I'm more of a cinema girl myself. But the few times I've been to the theater, the one thing I always take away from it is that, you know, let's say in the production of a play, there may be like two mortal enemies in the story and they hate each other and they do despicable things to each other, you know? And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so, I so identify, like I've been done so dirty and I identify with that character, you know? Mm. But then at the very end of the play, you know, all the actors come out and they take a bow and we all applaud and they're like smiling and the two characters who are playing mortal enemies, they're like hugging each other and they're so happy and they're like taking in the joy of sharing this experience with everyone. And I like to think, and this is another self-soothing thought, you know, pro-noia.
Yeah.
that what if the people who hurt me in this life, what if all of this has just been a play and in the afterlife, I'll be taking a bow and I'll be like looking at that person who hurt me so bad and made me cry so hard and gave me such a heartache and like pierced my soul, like really broke my heart. And actually the entire time they were my friend and they were just playing a role and none of that was real. I also have no lingering resentment, you know, we're sort of like washed clean of the bitterness and the anger and sadness. And we're hugging and embracing and laughing and looking back and thinking, oh my gosh, wasn't it so funny when like we were playing as if we hated each other, you know? Like there could be that in a way cathartic dimension of waking up from the simulation, you know, moving past and processing the absolute trauma that it would be to accept that what you thought was your life was just artificially programmed in you. Of course, that's going to take some time to like work through and release that pain. But once you sort of like come to grips with that, how joyful and how like liberating and cathartic to think that all the dramas, all of the betrayals and the abuse and whatever took place, you know, none of those things were real. You know, it's like that meme of the person on the bus. Like there's two people on the bus. One of them is facing the mountainside of a cliff. Mm-hmm. And the other is facing the beautiful view, expansive, you know, gorgeous panoramic view, you know, mm-hmm. but they're both saying, oh my gosh, this is real, or something like, my life is not real. You know, mm-hmm. let's say the meme, the title of the meme is, the caption is, my life is not real. There could be simultaneously two radically opposed, you know, like, photographic negative reactions to that statement, my life is not real. One person is mourning, you know, the very idea that like, I invested so much in this life and now it's not real. You're telling me this wasn't real, you know?
I have a question mm-hmm. for you though, Mary. What yeah. pill would you take?
100% without a doubt the red pill.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is because, as you know, I'm a very psychoanalytically minded person. Mm-hmm. And for me, psychoanalysis is not just a theory or like an interesting collection of ideas or concepts. It is like a way of life that I've committed to and devoted myself to mm-hmm. ever since I first discovered it. And psychoanalysis is by its nature a tower inducing discipline. It doesn't aim to soothe the ego, but to dismantle it, you know, and various methods can be used like gently or rigorously, sometimes violently. Mm-hmm. And the therapeutic process invites also a collapse, you know, a collapse of false narratives, idealized self-images, and socially conditioned defenses. It is a confrontation with the unconscious and with repressed memories and desires that rattle the foundation of the conscious mind. This is very much like a tower event. This inner cataclysm is necessary. And without the fall, there can be no reconstruction, no reorientation towards truth. So, and this is not something that I excel at 100% of the time, by the way. Like I'm also in the matrix. I'm also in the sense of like, sometimes I feel like a slave or a prisoner to things that are illusory, you know, and things that I think I have to pursue or be wedded to. And that's because of like conditioning, societal messages, whatever it may be, you know, my upbringing. But to know yourself, you know, to truly undergo the psychoanalytic mission is to welcome a tower moment. And that's why I would pick the red pill, literally because I crave, you know, lunging at the risk to destabilize my identity in the hope of encountering my own soul in its raw, unfiltered form. And so this collapse is, I try to tell myself, you know, the tower card in tarot, it is a collapse, but it is not the end. It's just the beginning of a new meaning that can then emerge. I am a bit of a sort of like, I guess you could say just, what's the word? I have like tried tarot reading a little bit, you know, I've done it for my friends for fun. I'm not a professional or anything, but I have noticed that whenever the tower card comes up, people really freak out, you know,
that's because so it true.
Does. Yeah. Like it signifies a sudden upheaval, shattering of illusions, collapse of structures we believed were solid. And People are afraid, you know, and that's normal. You know, the tower exposes a truth beneath falsehoods. And that system of falsehoods is something we've sort of etched out a little comforting space in for ourselves, you know? So it's like having the rug pulled from underneath you. Of course, you're going to have a reaction. It's completely normal. Because we've deliberately tried to not see certain truths. You know, we've like staged everything so that we could be blind to certain truths. So, of course, this imagery can provoke a visceral reaction And I'm not immune to that, even though I'm very psychoanalytically oriented and I try to always expose myself to things that will provoke me, you know, in a meaningful way. Mm. I'm also, you know, I'm human too. And I'm fallible. Like I'll have a reaction, but I feel like the more you do it, the better you get. It's like a practice and a training process. So it's fortifying. You know, like the more you do it, the better you get. And I don't know, like all of this to say, I would choose the red pill because ultimately, like, I need to know what's beyond this. Like, I don't know if it's because I'm a Scorpio. Like Scorpios are known to be like occultists and like love the paranormal and very conspiracy minded in terms of like constructing meaning about things that are unknown. And we love to peer past the wall. Like I need to know what's going on. Like I'm so curious and I often think about the afterlife. I do believe there is an afterlife. I don't know what it could possibly look like, but I think it's too easy to think that our soul just vanishes, you know? That can't possibly be true. So I'll take 10 red pills. I'm like, I'm really hardcore like that. So I would definitely take the red pill. What about you? Which pill would you take?
You know, I thought about this and I love your answer. I love your answer to all of this. This is just such a delight for me. You know, when I first watched the film the other day with my husband, who's also a Scorpio, so I totally understand. I at first was like, would I just take the blue pill? But the more I thought about it, I would never be able to live with myself. I think in my life, I have constantly reinvented myself in various parts of my life. I'm from the Bible Belt. I was supposed to marry a doctor, you know, in the South and like pump out babies and do the thing. And immediately I was like, no, that's not what I want. I'm going to go to boarding school for acting. I'm going to move to London when I'm 17, wow, which I did. And, you know, trained as an actor in England for 3 years. And then I moved to New York and had to reinvent myself again. And I got used to kind of walking away from things and not owning very much, but saying it's time for something. It's time to burn this part down and to start over. Honestly, is a kind of cleansing, ritual. And luckily for what I do, which is directing, writing, acting, I don't need like a lot of stuff for it. Mm-hmm. I need my computer. And I need, you know, the ability to write certainly. But that burning down process, I actually find quite cleansing. And so the more I thought about, you know, blue pill, red pill, I think I would absolutely take the red pill. Because I just don't need a lot. I just need like a threadbare, cool looking gray sweater and some slop to eat for, but the exciting thing is how much do you get to do then once you're awake? Knowing the truth about things and knowing the truth about yourself is just such an important part of life for me, in my creative endeavors and my personal endeavors. And it is the hardest work that I think anyone can do, is really kind of look at themselves. But I think it's the most worthwhile thing you can do, because once you're honest about that, that becomes universal and you find your people, you find your Zion. And if we talk about the second one, you find your rave party of like-minded people. because I think the more you know yourself and the more you're able to just say, I am not all this stuff. I am not this extra. What at the core am I? And once you can answer that, you really do start to find your people and your tribe. And you're the like-minded people in your life. I think red pill for me too, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I really love your answer and everything you said. I feel like we're for sure from the same tribe, where, you know, I feel like when Definitely. I talk with you, it feels like I'm talking to a kindred spirit, and it's so comforting. It's one of the rare moments, in this experience of just having like a literal connection and feeling like that person understands, and there's a lot of compassion, and it's so grounding. It's literally the opposite of derealization. I really feel like this is the genuine stuff, you know, and I feel totally like anchored and embodied, when I talk with you, and so much of what you say resonates, and also the way that you convey your vision through your art and your films. That is also a grounding experience for me. Like, I find it also authentic and truth telling. It's like the exact reverse of derealization. So I really hope you make a movie called Pronoia about all of this.
Oh my gosh. My brain is spinning. I'm going to have to, once we're done here. Yeah. I'm just going to have to write for the rest of the afternoon for sure. thank you so much for saying that, Mary. It's, honestly, the same goes for you. I feel like you're kind of everyone's psychoanalytic Morpheus in a way. Oh. I think you are able to really describe in such knowledgeable detail, really the construction of this matrix that we're all in. And I really do find your practice and your knowledge of psychoanalysis so thrilling and so exciting and constantly illuminating in every part of life. And especially in cinema, it's part of the reason I wanted to talk to you in this series, because true psychoanalysis and the knowledge that you have, and you're such an artist and a creator as well, being sensitive to all of that is required to have a tower moment to break things down and to really look at things as they are.
Yeah.
And there just isn't a more thrilling practice in my mind. I just think true creation can only happen with a solid foundation and an understanding of what that foundation is. And I think you certainly feed my creative endeavors in that way.
Oh my gosh, I'm honored. Thank you so much. That's so sweet. And I received that so gratefully, Emily.
Honestly, I didn't know how this conversation was going to go, but I'm so glad that we just kind of allowed it to be what it is, rather than talk, you know, moment by moment about the film, which honestly, most people have seen this film. I think they understand exactly how it goes. I was so interested in talking to you about the deeper concepts.
Yes.
And the paradigm shifting effect that this film had on everyone. There is no spoon, you know, take the red pill. It's just such wonderful touchstones, especially in this time of deepfake, AI, just constantly being plugged in, being online. I don't think humanity has ever been so plugged in ever. Honestly, now we're starting to question if what we're plugged into is even real, or if it's artificially made. I think this film resonates even more today than it did in 1999. It was just such a pleasure to dive back into the Matrix. And honestly, I wonder if there is a similar conversation to what we've just had about the Matrix, which I find the most interesting thing about it, the deconstruction of reality. I just wanted to say thank you so, so much for taking the time to join me on this episode of The Tower. And thank you for the perfect film, which is The Matrix.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much as well, Emily, for having me on your show. I love the concept of this project. I'm absolutely thrilled and delighted. It's always such a pleasure to talk with you. Like, time flies so rapidly when we're talking and like really locked into these fascinating dialogues. Everything that you produce is so heart-centered and visionary. And I can't wait to discover other people's Tower films. And yeah, it's just, I think that the very project is a radical act of defiance against times that try to crush us. And, you know, the collapse of falsehoods might seem shattering and traumatizing, but through practices like this and the wonderful work that you're doing, the commitment to the continuity of artistic practices is just so commendable, and it's so inspiring. And I just really want to thank you for everything you do, because you're a huge source of inspiration for me too.
Thank you so much, Mary. This is a new endeavor. I'm frankly still nervous about doing this podcast and starting these conversations, but they're conversations I want to be having anyway. And in times of chaos, which it feels like we're in constant chaos right now, it feels like a constant emergency. Mm-hmm. I personally take great comfort in exploring conversations that really look at things rather than trying to hide myself from them. Really looking at these films that deconstruct old ways, it's just an illuminating process for me. I'm just so, so grateful to share this time with you. And as I told you before, you know, the Tower's burning. I just want to dance in the flames.
Yes.
With all of the people I respect the most. And you are certainly at the top of that list. So, Mary Wilde, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure, Emily.
The Tower is a Glass Eye Picks production. The show is created and hosted by me, Emily Bennett. The show is produced by Jordan Goss-Poure. Technical advisor is Justin Brooks. Sound engineering by Mark Bush. Original music for The Tower was composed by Graham Resnick. Additional music provided by Epidemic Sound. Art by Steak Mountain. See you next time.
The Bleacher Report app is your destination for sports. Right now, the NBA is heating up, March Madness is here, and MLB is almost back. Every day there's a new headline, a new highlight, a new moment you've got to see for yourself. That's why I stay locked in with the Bleacher Report app. For me, it's about staying connected to my sports. I can follow the teams I care about, get real-time scores, breaking news, and highlights all in one place. Download the Bleacher Report app today so you never miss a moment.